Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Francine and Lynn are pleased to welcome Dr. Katarina Politi. Dr. Politi is an assistant professor of pathology at the Yale School of Medicine. Here's Francine Foss.
Let's start off by having you tell our audience a little bit about what cancer biology is.
Cancer biology is the science in which we try to understand which genes are involved in the process of tumor initiation, so what starts off the tumorigenic process, what genes are involved in tumor maintenance, so what is required for a tumor to survive once it has already formed, and what leads to tumor progression so what leads to the development of metastases. And in cancer biology, we also study the interplay of different cell types within a tumor. These cell types form what is called the tumor microenvironment and is made up, for example, of immune cells, blood vessels, and connective tissue.
So this is obviously fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you became interested in studying cancer biology?
Mm-hmm. So I studied biological sciences at the University of Pavia in Italy, where I grew up, and after which I came to the U.S., and I got my PhD in genetics and development at Columbia University in New York. After that, I went to do a postdoc at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, where I worked in Harold Varmus's lab, who's currently the director of the National Cancer Institute. I really became interested in cancer biology early on during my studies while I was at university, when I began to learn about genes involved in cancer and how these alterations in these genes in cancer cells really disrupted the circuitry within a cell.
So, Katarina, you talk about cancer cells and tumor biology. So could you just tell our audience what the relationship is between cancer cells and tumors,
mm-hmm.
just in basic
sure,
terms?
Sure, of course. So the cancer cells are what make up a tumor. So each tumor is made up of many, many different cancer cells.
And is it true that those cancer cells may not all be exactly identical?
That is true. So one of the ideas is that really you have a genetic event within a cell that gives it an advantage, a survival advantage. And so that cell begins to grow and to proliferate, so to multiply. But then those other cells can also acquire other changes. And so this is actually one of the major problems in cancer biology, and I think we'll talk about it a little bit later on as well, is that even when you have a tumor that is made up of many cancer cells, there may actually be different populations of cancer cells with different changes within each individual tumor.
Are there particular areas of cancer biology research that are happening now that are of great interest of lots of different investigators, or is there one or two areas or many? Talk to our audience about that.
Well, I think that one of the things that we've really seen emerge has been that in the past 20 or so years, there really was a focus on understanding the circuitry that I was talking about before within a cell. So how do the different pathways in a cell that lead to proliferation and survival, what are the genes and proteins that make them up, and how do they function? And now we're really understanding much better how these are altered within cancer. And so what is happening now is that there really is a lot of a focus on understanding the full complement of all of these changes that happen within each individual tumor. So this really goes into looking at the genomics, so sequencing the DNA, understanding all of the changes in individual tumors. And then one of the things that we can also do is we can work on interfering with these changes. And so this is a large focus of research right now, is focusing on really understanding how we can interfere with individual changes within each particular tumor. And this is something that requires not only the cancer biologist sitting in their lab working alone, but that really requires a team effort in which the cancer biologists are talking to the oncologists, who are talking to the surgeons, who are talking to the pathologists, so that we can really study individual changes within each tumor.
I think, Katarina, that's one of the major changes that I've seen in cancer biology in the last 15 years or so. Is a long time ago, we thought about a cancer cell and investigators focused on a single mutation or oncogene in that cell. And now when we talk about many of these cancers, we see these very complicated network diagrams that involve lots of different pathways, some of which are even normal cellular pathways, and how they impact on the development of cancer. So we're at a completely different level of complexity now.
Yes, absolutely. That's correct. And one of the things that is happening is that now what is being done at various institutions is that, and for certain tumor types, is actually that at the time when a tumor is diagnosed, that tumor is then being tested for a whole array of genetic changes. And even treatment strategies are then being devised to really interfere specifically with the specific types of alterations that are found in that tumor.
There's a tremendous amount of research going on here at the university in cancer and cancer biology, and obviously with the new construction of the Smilow Cancer Hospital and lots of exciting things going on here, was that part of the attraction for you to come to Yale? Obviously you had done a lot of your training and developed a lot of your career in New York. How long have you been here, and what made you make the change to come to New Haven?
So I actually arrived here in July, so just a couple of months ago, and I was really attracted to come to Yale because of the really great faculty in the basic sciences and the great clinical faculty. And I felt like with this really this commitment of Yale to furthering cancer research and treatment, and it was a great place for me to start my lab as a junior investigator, because this really translates into a very dynamic scientific environment where communication between scientists and clinicians is encouraged, where there are cancer biology seminars that are being organized, and there are plans to really train students in cancer biology, and resources are being allocated to cancer biology. So for someone whose lab is in this field, this is a great moment to come here, at a place where the foundation, the basic science and the clinical foundation is so strong.
And Katarina, I understand that cancer biology isn't necessarily a silo organization, that you cut across, as you point out, multiple other disciplines and other areas around the university. Can you talk a little bit about how you integrate with other departments who perhaps aren't necessarily studying cancer biology, but are studying important pathways and mechanisms that could complement your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two aspects to this. So one of them is that I can work with people in various basic science departments. So, for example, one of the genes, and I'll talk a little bit about that I work on, is the epidermal growth factor receptor gene. And so what we, when we study this gene and we study mutations in this gene, we really have to understand, for example, how these mutations alter the structure of the protein. And so there we will interface with a structural biologist, for example. At the same time, some of the things that I work on, for example, are I develop genetically engineered mouse models of lung cancer based on these EGF receptor mutations. And so we have to figure out ways in which we can actually visualize the tumors. So then we'll talk to people from the imaging departments for MRI imaging, for CT imaging, PET imaging, to see if we can visualize these tumors and even maybe develop ways in which we can specifically view EGF receptor mutant tumors. So those are just a couple of examples of how the work that I do really requires this really strong foundation in the basic sciences that there is here.
You had mentioned lung cancer. Be a little more specific with us about what types of cancers you study and within those, what sort of work that you're doing.
So I study lung cancer, and lung cancer can actually be divided into two main histological groups, small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. Now, non-small cell lung cancer makes up 80% of all lung cancers and is further can be further subdivided into three histological subtypes, lung adenocarcinomas, squamous cell carcinomas, and large cell carcinomas. Now, lung adenocarcinomas actually develop at the periphery of the lung, in contrast to squamous cell carcinomas, which instead develop more centrally in the central airways. And lung adenocarcinomas are rising in incidence, actually, and that is believed to be due to the increased use of filtered cigarettes, which actually allow people to breathe the smoke into more deeply, so carcinogens from the smoke reach the periphery of the lung more easily. And so my work actually focuses on studying genes that are mutated in lung cancer. And so what we know is that even though lung adenocarcinomas may look very similar when you look at them under the microscope, they can actually be subdivided into different categories based on genes that we know that are altered in these lung adenocarcinomas. And one of the genes that is altered in about 10 to 15% of lung adenocarcinomas in the US is called the epidermal growth factor receptor gene. And this gene is actually mutated most frequently in lung adenocarcinomas that arise in people who have never smoked. Importantly, it is actually tumors with EGF receptor mutations are more sensitive to treatment with specific drugs that have been developed during the past several years that block the activity of the epidermal growth factor receptor protein.
So, Katarina, the epidermal growth factor receptor is an important element on normal cells as well. And so the distinguishing factor with the tumor cells is that this particular protein is mutated.
That's right. And so the epidermal growth factor receptor is present on human cells, and it is one of these proteins that actually will sense cues from the external environment telling the cell whether the cell should survive and multiply or whether it shouldn't. And in the case where it is mutated, it doesn't know how to regulate these signals anymore, and so it's always active.
So let me ask you the key question then. In the non-smokers who have an increased expression of this mutated receptor, how does that mutation happen outside of the setting of smoking, which obviously exposes the lung to carcinogens?
I think the answer to that question is really not known at this point yet. So,
and is that something that you're looking at in your research as well? Are you focusing on how those mutations happen?
So I actually am not working on this in my laboratory. There are certainly groups that are trying to understand why this is happening. And for example, one of the things that we know is that there's a higher frequency of mutations in lung adenocarcinomas in Asians in the EGF receptor. And so one of the possibilities is that there may be some environmental factors there that may actually give a higher frequency of these mutations. But this is an area of active investigation. Nobody knows the answer.
Well, thank you, Katarina. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about cancer biology with Dr. Katarina Politi.
This year, over 200,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer. And in Connecticut alone, there will be over 2,000 new cases. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are related to smoking, and quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they have ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. An option for lung cancer patients in need of surgery at Yale Cancer Center is a video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery, also known as a VATS procedure, which is a minimally invasive technique. This has been a Medical Minute. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss. Today, we're joined by Dr. Katarina Politi, and we're discussing cancer biology. So, Katarina, tell us a little bit more about the mouse models with lung cancer that you've developed. Tell us sort of what you do when you get into work or into the laboratory every day.
So when I developed the mouse models of lung cancer that I'll tell you about, I really wanted to, we had just discovered EGF receptor mutations, and the group I was working with at Sloan Kettering discovered these along with other groups in Boston, in particular Tom Lynch's group when he was at MGH as well. So what I really wanted to do is I wanted to understand how the mutant EGF receptor, how it's actually changing the biology of the tumor cells to cause cancer. And one of the other, and so to do this, I decided to develop these mice in which I could actually turn on a copy of mutant EGF receptor in the lung and see what happened. And in fact, what we can see is we can see that these mice develop lung tumors, and they very closely resemble the lung tumors that have EGF receptor mutations in the case of human cancer. Importantly, what we can do is we can also use visualize the tumors using imaging, like magnetic resonance imaging or CT scans. And we can test different drugs on mice that have tumors to see how effective they are at getting the tumor to go away. And so the drugs that are used clinically now in humans also work very effectively in these mouse models of cancer. And one of the problems with drugs that are used to block the activity of mutant EGF receptor in the clinic is that they work initially, but drug resistance really inevitably emerges. And so drug-resistant tumors develop. And so we've used our mice to develop a model of resistance to these EGF receptor inhibitors.
So, Katarina, can you expand a little bit on how you interact with the medical oncologists who are treating lung cancer patients, and how you connect your work on drug resistance to what's actually happening in the clinic in patients?
So ever since I started working on lung cancer at Sloan Kettering, we had a group there of thoracic oncologists, surgeons, pathologists, and scientists. And we were really trying to figure out what the important questions, clinical questions related to lung cancer were, and so how we could answer those questions in the laboratory. And this type of approach will continue here at Yale as well. We're actually putting together a translational lung team to work on problems in lung cancer. And so one of the examples of how our mouse models are very effective is that we, in collaboration with William Pao, a scientist and thoracic oncologist who is now at Vanderbilt, we developed a mouse with EGF receptor mutant lung cancer that was resistant to treatment with these drugs that are used in the clinic. And we tested various different new drugs and drug combinations, and we found one combination that works really well in this mouse model. And so the tumors shrink very rapidly. And so this really formed the basis, actually, for a clinical trial that is now ongoing. It's starting at sites that include Memorial Sloan Kettering, Vanderbilt, and Yale. And so this is how rapidly that this translational lung cancer group really rapidly tested things in the genetically engineered mice and are moving on to the clinic to help people who really need effective treatments fast.
And I think the important thing about what you're saying is that historically, when we've combined therapies in the treatment of cancer patients, we haven't necessarily had a strong rationale for combining them. We haven't really had these kinds of molecular models where we've been able to show in a mouse tumor system that that combination is better than either drug alone. So that's certainly a giant step forward.
Well, I think that now our knowledge of what is happening in individual tumors is really helping us figure out what we need to do to block that tumor from growing.
Regarding the mice, do you have to do anything special to their immune system to make the model work, or are they completely normal mice? Tell us about that.
So the mice that we use actually are immune-competent mice. So they're immune systems are completely normal. And this is actually very important, and it is different from what has historically been done to test drugs. In fact, pharmaceutical companies historically use xenograft models. And what that means is that human lung cancer cell lines are injected into mice that do not have a normal immune system, otherwise the mouse would reject the human cells and a tumor is allowed to grow. And and one of the problems is that the immune system is a very important component of tumor formation. It really, whether the immune system is functioning or not, can modulate tumorigenesis. And so one of the advantages of using the genetically engineered mice that I'm talking about is that we're doing these experiments in the context of an intact host. So everything is functioning.
I see.
Normally.
So that's a major, again, step forward in cancer biology compared to the way we used to do things. Are there other major advances in cancer biology that you can tell us about?
Well, I think there are advances in terms of really mainly our knowledge of what is happening within individual tumors. So now there are big projects that have been undertaken by the National Cancer Institute. I'm thinking of like the Tumor Cancer Genome Atlas, in which we're really sequencing tumors of different types. And we're not only sequencing them to see what mutations there are, but we're also looking at how the levels of genes changes, how the levels of proteins change, and trying to integrate all of this information so that we can really get a full picture of what is happening in each individual tumor. One of the other big changes that has occurred is that formerly, a lot of drug discovery would happen within drug companies. And now, as we're learning more about the molecular pathology of tumors and about the specific changes that there are, and we have very good models even within academia, a lot of the and our technologies are better, we can actually do a lot of drug screening even within an academic institution. And so it is not unheard of for drugs for the development of drugs to actually start within universities, for example, or institutes.
So you had mentioned lung cancers being related to smoking. People smoke, the lung is exposed to smoke. We can understand how a cancer can develop in the lung. And you may, in very basic terms, describe for us what sort of differences are you aware of when we have a lung cancer that originates in the lung compared to a tumor somewhere else that may spread to the lung? And, you know, when I take care of a lung cancer patient, often those cancers are generally in one place or may spread to the lymph nodes nearby, sometimes spread to other parts of the lungs. But in some patients I've taken care of who have a cancer elsewhere in their body, it may spread to many different parts of the lung. What is it about the cancer biology of these cells that makes one tend to behave itself sort of in an isolated way and the other one perhaps spread very aggressively throughout the same kind of organ?
So even within lung cancer, for example, there are many different tumor types. So there is a situation in which there is a type of bronchiolar alveolar carcinoma, which is a subtype of lung adenocarcinoma, pneumonic BAC, which is called, which actually spreads throughout the whole lung field as well, as opposed to, for example, focal tumors. And then there's a situation in which there are cases in which you can have multiple primaries occur within the lung. So it's I think we really don't know very much about what the differences are molecularly between these different tumor types. And I think that we'll see in now that we have a better grasp on the molecular changes within that occur within different tumors, we'll see more of a focus on trying to understand these more complex issues in cancer biology that we couldn't really understand. One of the we couldn't understand or really even begin to grapple with previously, like really studying metastasis. But going back to your questions, one of the thoughts is that there may be a subpopulation, let's say within a breast tumor that metastasizes to the lung, there may be a subpopulation that goes through the bloodstream that has acquired the ability to grow well in the lungs, for example. And so that's what may be happening. And so it goes through the bloodstream, but it has acquired some genetic change or epigenetic change or something that allows it to spread through the blood and then to really survive well in the lung. And so that's one of the
And I think thoughts. That gets back to a point we made earlier in the show, which is that tumors are not necessarily homogeneous groups of cells, as you mentioned. There are multiple different aberrant pathways that could be expressed, and they can be different within the same tumor.
Yes, that's right.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your EGF receptor work. And lung cancer, of course, isn't the only tumor that overexpresses EGF receptor. And I wonder if you could talk about some of the other tumor types and how applicable your findings are in lung cancer are going to be for some of these other tumors as well.
Mm-hmm. So the EGF receptor mutations are really, in these specific types of mutations, have really only been observed in lung adenocarcinomas. They're very, very rarely found in other types. Overexpression of EGF receptor, on the other hand, has been found actually in other tumor types, such as colon cancer. And once again, there are drugs that target the EGF receptor and that are used in colon cancer, for example, the antibody to the EGF receptor, cetuximab. And so similarly there, you have a specific change in a gene that is really driving tumorigenesis there. And so when you block the activity of that specific gene, you're blocking the ability of that tumor to survive. So that's very similar. The problem is that the EGF receptor inhibitors that work on mutant EGF receptor in lung cancer do not work as well on just high levels of EGF receptor. They have a better affinity for mutant EGF receptor. So those drugs cannot be used, for example, in colon cancer.
I think that's an important point for our listeners who might be familiar with some of these drugs or read on the internet about some of these new agents, that even though it's EGF receptor associated, it may not be applicable to their specific kind of cancer.
You've only been here a few months and obviously thought a lot about the future. What sort of things are you looking forward to in your work here at Yale? What sort of opportunities do you see in the future or in the short term?
So I'm really looking forward to working with a translational lung cancer team here. I'm very excited. I think when I was in the process of choosing to come to Yale, I met a lot of people, and there really are lots of there's great work in studying circulating tumor cells, stem cells, inflammation, serum changes in lung cancer. And so I'm really looking forward to working together with this group. It's a very exciting time. There also have been, in the past couple of years, I think, several cancer biologists who were recruited here, junior investigators. And so it's been really exciting to get to meet them, talk to them about research. So I'm very much looking forward to, in the future, working together with them.
Dr. Katarina Politi is an assistant professor of pathology at the Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.